Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the 11th episode of Slam Fire Radio.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the 11th.
11th. You keep making fun of me of the way I say my numbers, and so I thought I'd come up with my own way of saying it.
See, even when I'm here, it doesn't do any good.
11th. It's 11th.
So, to the listeners who are like, why do you leave them two alone? As you can see, it makes no difference if I'm here or not.
It doesn't make, no.
They do what they like.
We do what we like. And Trevor just complains. Huh?
Apparently. So yes. It would have sounded something like this if it was my turn. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Slam Fire Radio, episode 111 for June 12th, 2015. Right. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Furlot.
And that would have been way more boring than my way, because my way, people learned a new number, 11-1.
No, they learned gibberish. 11-1 is not a word.
It's a word. It's in Lord of the Rings. Now. It's in Lord of the Rings, therefore it's a word.
If Flipperossi the word, 11-1 is a word.
There you go.
All right, welcome to episode 11-1, everybody.
Here we are. I'm Matthew, and like Trevor just said, he's Trevor, and Owen's not here. He's got a pretty good excuse, though.
Now, before you say what the excuse is, Owen caused a bit of stir last week, unknowingly. He made a brief comment, just off the cuff, called himself a single dad.
Yes.
I received inquiries as to whether or not Owen and his wife had suddenly split up.
No, they had not. His wife was just in Halifax for a while and still is.
Yeah. They had some marriage maintenance about 9 months ago.
The marriage maintenance, yes, and that resulted in a tumor of sorts.
Of sorts.
It's a baby.
You just called his child a tumor.
I'm sorry, Owen. I didn't mean that.
Owen's wife had a baby, everybody.
Yes.
I've written down, but I
Lavinia? No, Lavivia. I'm going to look it up because I know what it is.
It's not.
It's not a common name.
No. So but Owen's not a common guy.
Owen's not a common guy. No. My Facebook.
Lavinia. Lavinia.
Lavinia Hope. Lavinia or Lavinia? I'm not sure which. But she's a cutie. He's got a picture of her on Facebook.
Yeah, but why does she look like you? And I wanted to post that on the Facebook wall. And be
that
like,
would have been completely inappropriate.
Maybe that's why I didn't.
So however, hilarious.
Do it on the podcast. Yeah,
do it on the podcast instead. No, it doesn't look at all like me. She's cute.
Right. She looks like Jewel.
Looks like Jewel.
What?
There you go. We're moving on at this point.
Yeah.
Carrying on. Smoothly, with no segue whatsoever.
What did you do this week in guns?
I bought 1,000 rounds of Wolf Reloaded 9mm ammo from SFRC, which was a really good price, actually. I haven't bought ammo from SFRC before. I wasn't sure what the shipping was going to be like, but after taxes and after shipping, $365 to my door.
That is decent.
And literally to my door. The guy walked up my steps and knocked on my door and handed me 1,000 rounds of 9mm ammo. Like it's to my door. It's awesome. So it was a good price. Now, I did find out the very next day that New Shooter Canada had an 8% discount code. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the next day.
The next day. The day after, if you will.
So I could have saved like $20 or something had George been just a day sooner. But he wasn't.
Oh, well.
And so George owes me $20.
That's the way I see it.
I don't understand another way of doing this, really.
No, George told us about the discount code day late and $20 short.
A day late and $20 short. That's a thing.
That's a thing.
So this stuff looks really good.
Matthew takes EMTs.
Yeah, I do take EMTs, yes. Yeah.
So is it brass case?
It is brass. It's reloadable. There is some nickel brass and some brass.
Ooh.
It's a mix and match, but all the ammo, it's 124 grain. I was looking for 147, but they were all out of 147s. I'll take 124. It's no big deal. It's very shiny, very clean, very, very well made. I looked at some of them and they looks like really good quality ammo. which is everything I've heard about it on the internet anyway. So everything on the internet is true. So
right. And if it's not, you correct it. That's
I correct it if somebody is wrong.
Who's making or where's Wolf being made? Because there's Wolf with the there's the Wolf I know of from Russia that makes 7.62 and 5.56 and stuff, Steelcase stuff. But is this the same Wolf or is this a different Wolf company?
I am not sure.
Or does it say where it's made on the package?
No. It might, but it's just bulk packaging. It's not like.
I thought it was the yellow box with the black label.
It's not. It's white boxes with 250 rounds in each box.
Okay.
So, I'm not sure. It says here, just looking, it says Kingston, Ontario, Wolf Bullets. But that might not even be it. That might be something completely different. I just went on the internet real quick. So, not sure where it came from or what it is or who makes it, but it looks good. And I'll be taking it out and shooting it. And I'll be shooting it in the BRS 99 when it gets here next week. That's what I'll be shooting it in, and that's going to be awesome. So, special thanks to Tom for sending that when it gets here. Also, I did more of the usual. Oddly enough, went shooting, this time Jules 22 in the gravel pit. I switched it up a little bit. So, that's the 22 with the Bushnell AR-22 scope on it. And it's been a while. I used to be a nothing but scope shooter. I used to shoot scopes, and that was basically it. I didn't have anything with open sights. Just everything I shot was with a scope. And a couple of years ago, I decided I need to learn this skill of shooting with open sights. And so all the scopes came off almost all of my rifles.
Yeah, when you and I met, you were a hardcore iron sights guy.
Yep. And now I'm sort of mellowed in between. I've got my open sights guns and I've got my scoped guns. I understand they both have a role to fill and I'm trying to perfect both of them. But in my quest to be a good open or iron sight shooter, I've kind of let the scope shooting kind of fall to the side. And I discovered that out in the pit. Shooting distance, again, no problem. I mean, I understand my holdovers. I understand my trajectories. And the Bushnell AR-22 has the drop dots on the reticle anyway. So it was really, I mean, anything long range, nailing, no problem. But then I wanted to shoot some things up close. And I had to retrain myself how to, you know, how much to hold over at different distances, you know, inside of 10 or 15 yards. And it's, you know, it's significant. So I actually had a little bit of fun relearning how to shoot with a scope up close. So that was kind of neat to do, just to kind of get back into that.
What's it zeroed at?
50.
Okay. Yep. The Nikon version that I have, same idea. It's the 22 line. They make it's the exact same product made by Nikon. Bushnell makes them for the 22 AR and the actual AR-15 and 5.56. Well, Nikon does the same thing.
Right.
As a P22 and then the M22. So I've got the same scope as yours, but in Nikon, and mine doesn't have a bullet draw compensator. Mine has a adjustable turret. So right. You zero it at one distance, and then you just rotate the turret to, well, of course, it's not calibrated for every ammo, right? I mean, it's got to be probably, I don't know if it's 40 grain or 36, and I've actually never gotten around to.
It's probably pretty close for your average ammo, though. And it does have the yards on it, right? Not the actual just your clicks up and clicks down. It actually has 100, 200, or whatever, right?
Yeah, it says like 50 yards, 75 yards, 100 yards, and so
on. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, I got to play with it more.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're not really a 22 guy anyway, so it's probably not that big a deal. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to know how to shoot your 22.
Well, and I'd like to see how accurate it actually is. Even if I just took my 8-inch gong that Curtis made for me and brought it out there and zeroed it on paper at 50 and then started moving the gong around and simply spun the dial to the next yardage, if I hit that gong on every one of those marks, yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you should do that. Why don't you do that?
I will.
Why don't you go do that right now?
Because it's raining.
Oh, yes, it's raining.
And I'm recording
here
a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's what we're doing. Huh.
Yeah. Shout out to Stacy. She's got to drive for 14 hours to Florida, and she's demanding something to listen to. So
this
show is dedicated to Stacy.
Hi, Stacy. Can't wait to see you in a couple weeks. Weeks?
Weeks.
Dude, it's weeks. It's less than weeks. It's like a week and a half or something, isn't it?
You know, I kind of can't wait till it's done.
Yeah, well, I get that, but at the same time, I can't wait to see everybody and hang out.
Well, me too, and it's going to be the culmination, that's a word.
For sure.
Of a basically month and a half. Like, we started off the Black Badge and the Miramichi in May, or in, started off May 24th weekend, Black Badge Rescuers, the following weekend, Black Badge and Miramichi. Then the weekend after that, a level 2 match. This weekend, an RO course. Next weekend is the Southern New Brunswick 250, and then the charity shoot.
That's going to be fun, too, the SNB 250.
Oh, yeah. I'll be ready for a break at the charity
shoot. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Remember when I came home last year and then let the barbecue burn?
Yes, that's what's going to happen again.
I might not even leave the range. I might just like lay down on the range and go, I'll be here tomorrow, guys.
And we're done.
And I'm done. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Well, what else did you do, seeing as we've moved on to what you've been doing anyway? So,
oh, yeah. Okay.
I was pretty much done anyway.
I kind of cut you off there. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not used to that at all. Wait.
Okay, so Muffin and I taught a Black Badge course in the Miramichi. It almost didn't happen. We were literally on our way to the Miramichi when Harold called us to tell us that Ronnie and Carol were in that motorcycle accident that morning.
Right.
And when we got to this part of the highway where the accident occurred, that part of the highway was still closed. So it was a rough drive, and we didn't know what to do. Do we go? Do we turn around? And Harold said, "What are you going to do? You're going to go, and you're going to teach. They're waiting on you guys, and Ronnie would want you to go. Ronnie wouldn't want you to come home. You can't go see him. He's not in the hospital. You're going to come home and do nothing." So
yeah.
That's what we did. For the rest of the drive, I don't think we said three words. We got down there and we did our thing and we didn't say anything to anyone. Well, we told Doug because...
Yeah, Doug, yeah.
Yeah, so, but then we didn't, we just kind of put it aside and taught the class and taught the qualifiers and shot the match and then announced it at the end of the match because there were some people there that knew.
Yeah,
well
you don't want that weighing in everybody's mind while they're learning new skills and stuff.
Absolutely. It wasn't they didn't need any of that baggage. Yep. They were there to get something done and we were there to do a job and I just went into autopilot, right?
Yep.
So, I've decided to put on an annual fundraiser in his name at the Rescue
cool.
Gun Club. So it's going to be next year, the weekend of his memorial service, the first weekend of June every year from now on. Will be the Rock Out with Your Glock Out Ronnie DeGroot Memorial Steel Challenge.
Steel Challenge. Love Steel Challenge. I'll be there.
Yeah. And, you know, it'd be nice if you could shoot it with a Glock because Ronnie was a Glock shooter. Ronnie loves
steel. I'll shoot it with my Glock, that's for sure.
Most of the steel props on that range, especially the ones that were built for the Nationals, Ronnie built them.
Yep.
Ronnie, as you'll hear later from Chris, I mean, just an amazing contributor to that range. And everybody wants to shoot Steel Challenge every year, but usually they ask for it at the end of the season after I put on a 3-gun and I'm done.
Yeah,
burn,
no,
right?
You're tired at that point. Yeah. And then you got to lug all that steel around.
Yeah. So this is going to be an actual Steel Challenge match, the same one that you see the big boys do in the U.S., Pope and Poke and Hope and all those. You can print them off the internet, set them up accordingly. We have all that steel to put on legitimate Steel Challenge matches. So that's what we're going to do. So it's going to be the first annual Rock Out with Your Glock Out Ronnie DeGroot Memorial Steel Challenge. And there's a Facebook event created on Facebook with the date and some of the details. And all the money raised at that event will go over to the Snowmobile Club, which was one of Ronnie's groups that he was a member of. So big time
nice.
Snowmobiler, yeah.
Good.
At the match was fun. Unfortunately, I finished third. It was Harold, then Nick, then me.
Oh, Nick beat you.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
1 point at a time, I guess.
I guess.
I threw away a couple of stages.
Oh, okay. That happened. Yeah. I mean,
But I didn't give up because, you know, maybe the other guy's going to throw away stage two.
Well, that's the thing, eh? You can't let things like that discourage you because you never know.
Yeah. The course was awesome. We had, a 1911 in it, which ran great. It was a 9mm 1911 STI, so of course it ran great.
Right.
There was a Glock 19, which was awesome. So that was in the first time I saw a Glock 19 used in a IPSC match. So it's pretty good.
Very nice.
And then Luke Giroux brought me my Garand. It was repaired and returned to me. So I had a little bit of factory ammo on me. And I had some of my reloads on me, and the factory ammo, just Remington Core-Lock 150 grain, it cycled the Garand no problem. I heard the ping.
Nice.
The reloads that I made weren't powerful enough; they wouldn't cycle it. So
you just need to crank up the ammo or the powder in your reload.
A little bit, yeah. And then I picked up, we got three of those gas plugs that Spencer the Whale was telling us about.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of, what it does is it increases your cylinder volume by 30%.
Right.
Decreasing the pressure that builds up in that cylinder.
Right.
So you can safely shoot more powerful modern ammunition because there's more room for the gas to expand in the cylinder now and not bend your op rod.
Sure. Yeah.
Interesting. I took it out and it wouldn't cycle with that new cylinder in there.
It wouldn't?
No. I don't even factory ammo. I don't think it would even cycle with the core lock. So I'm going to go get some more core lock and I'm going to test the core lock with the grand plug and then the aftermarket grand plug and see what I get. And if I can just run my grand safely with Remington core lock, I probably won't bother reloading. I'll just buy a box of Remington core lock every once in a while when I want to shoot my grand.
Right. Yeah.
I got out with my NEA-39. I took the Tasco red dot optic that I was running on my VZ-58 and put it on the NEA-39.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to run this in the Shaw Clinic, and cool. I need an optic, and I don't think I'm buying two more guns before then, so I don't think there's going to be enough money to buy any optics this summer. So I just threw that on there, and I went and I zeroed it at 36 meters. And shot random targets around the range and different berms and stuff, and just love this gun. Works really, really well. I had no hiccups. I got one mag that is giving me a bit of trouble, but other than that, the gun itself is fantastic. I installed also. I got a Mark 18 that came in on Monday, and it had a Voltor stock on it, which mm-hmm. is kind of similar to the Magpul ACS in that it's got battery compartments and a compartment for a cleaning kit.
Yep.
That was on the Mark 18. I want the Mark 18 streamlined and lightweight, so I took it off, put it on the NEA-39, and put a regular Magpul MOE on the Mark 18. So what else did I do? Shot a level 2 match on Saturday. So it was on the range basically every day except for Wednesday, Ronnie's Memorial. Thursday night, we were out there till basically 20 to 10. We're back out there. That's why I wasn't on the show last week. I was working on the stages for the match on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Back out there Friday night. So Saturday, set up this amazing match, Matthew. 9 stages, 182 rounds, fun stages, some challenging stages as well. Memory stage, distance on steel, distance on paper, some stand and deliver, some movement. Really good match. Finish first. Out of four people.
Four, yes.
Yeah.
Four whole people showed up. I wanted to come, but busy.
That's too bad. It was a lot of fun. But it was my local standard division competition where there are Harold and his son Nick and Remy Saint-Onge.
Right.
And I bought a gun that day. Well, made a plan to buy a gun. Remy, I think I told a story where Remy bought the SVI and the mags were falling out.
Mm-hmm.
Before he checked, he had bought a backup Edge.
Yep.
This Edge has a real nice mag well on it. It's got a nice aluminum grip on it. Doesn't have the recoil master. It's got a full-length guide rod, so that's kind of neat. I'll try that, see if I like that, because I've only ever shot my 40 with a recoil master.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe I like this more. And if I do, great. I'll put that system in the Eagle. If I don't, then I'll put a recoil master in it. Trigger's kind of horrific right now. But that's easily fixed. It's 2011, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, he offered me the gun on a really smoking deal, so I'll be picking that up probably in August. I'm going to save up for it and buy it. And then cool. I went back to the range the next day with my Thompson Center Venture Predator and got dismal results. I put oil in the barrel this winter,
uh-huh.
not knowing what the humidity levels were like. I oiled all my barrels of the rifles that I weren't shooting, and I put them away. And I cleaned, 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 and I just could not get clean patches to come out of this thing. And Bolivar was like, enough, man. You're going to drive yourself crazy. Just put some hoppies on a patch, run it through. That will take the oil out of the barrel, put a couple of dry patches through, and go shoot the gun. And it's almost like I have to foul it in again.
Right.
The oil I used was Ballistol, and that stuff will eat anything in your barrel. So I think I've removed that copper bearing.
You just need to, you need to shoot it again and get that back.
You need to shoot it in again, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, the groups at 200 meters were 4 inches.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
No. So, and I mean, I've shot a sub-MOA group at 200 meters with that gun in the past.
Yep.
I've reloaded for it several times. Going to try. I've got some test loads loaded up right now, some 50-grain spear bullets that Toby sent me years ago, and some Hornady 40-grain bullets. It's a 1-in-12 twist barrel. The ammo it likes best is Winchester White Box 45-grain jacket hollow point. So I brought it back to 100 and shot a fairly decent group with it at the end of the day. Still nothing spectacular. Now, I'm not talking Savage Axe accuracy either. disappointing. So anyway, I got to get back out with that and put another 10 or 20 rounds through it and then try and stretch it out to 200.
We should try to actually take these 2-3 rifles that we have, our Predator rifles that we have, and actually go do some Predator hunting.
We should,
Coyote hunting or something. We got to use them.
What have I shot with this thing? Shot a crow and a groundhog with it, maybe?
That's pretty similar to what I've shot with mine so far.
So my 17's got the best Predator kill so far. That was a crazy long shot on a... I'm buying a 17. Remember
I heard that.
Yeah, the Gopher Apocalypse I went on in Calgary.
Yeah,
Jeff's selling that rifle. So I'm like,
you're going to buy it.
Oh, it's in the Bible. I have to. Like it's in Genesis or something.
Thou shalt buy
the Apocalypse rifle.
Yes.
Yeah, so... my Steyr... More Steyr news. Got that Steyr from
Steyr stick.
Yeah, from Rossinator, and took it out to your place, and the striker broke. Somehow, I still think it's Matt's fault.
It's definitely Matt's fault.
Completely random act. Could have happened to anybody, but
it's Matt's fault.
Yeah, it's totally Matt's fault. got a new striker in from them right away, and then I was having failure to extract. They sent me a new extractor, spring and plunger. The plunger is tapered on one side. If something round can have a side. It's the tapered side.
Sure.
No instructions on how to install it. I installed it apparently backwards.
You had a 50-50 chance.
Yeah,
and you
which
lost.
I've never been good with. Yeah. Anyway, I put 100 rounds through it, and I got 2 failures to extract, and then put another 20 or 30 rounds through it, got another 2 failures to extract. Thought, okay, maybe that tapered side has something to do with it. I rotated 180 degrees, so now the tapered side is facing out, not in, and so you can actually see it behind the extractor, and put 50 rounds through it on Sunday with not a hiccup.
Okay.
Except I had a mag that couldn't get a 10th round in, and really locked the mag up. Really, I forced it in, and it just completely locked the mag up, so I had to take the follower out, file it down. The other thing I did was I shot my VZ-58 at 100 meters on Sunday. With the iron sights, this is
and
it was brutal, man. It was those sights were hard to see.
Yeah,
and I shot it off of the bench, 100 meters on paper, and we're talking between 4 and 6 inches.
Okay.
So
yeah, I think you can do better.
Maybe if I tried, I just wanted to make sure I was getting good hits.
I wanted to make sure it's hitting where it's aiming. Yeah, but I think I think with a bit of practice, you could probably get that a little bit tighter.
I mean,
shooting irons is hard. I mean, it's completely different skill than red dots and crosshairs.
Yeah, I threw a red dot on that gun, and I zeroed it at 36 and then hadn't done anything with it since.
Yeah.
I didn't even know where the irons were hitting. And, I mean, of course, the irons are there as a backup. You got to know where they're hitting. So I want a minute a man, and it gave me a minute a man. I need to get one of those SKS or VZ front sight pusher tools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you built one once out of a little C-clamp for one of your guns. Yeah. Because it was shooting slightly to the left. The group was left of center.
Yep.
So,
it'd be nice to get that straight.
Yeah. And it's got a slider, right, that apparently takes you out to 800.
Right.
Well, we've got a gong at 200. I'd like to put the slider out there to 200 and see if I can hit the gong. And then my Mark 18 came in on Monday. And, everybody knows that the AR-15 is my favorite platform.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think the Mark 18 is my favorite AR.
It's like the Glock 7. All handguns should be Glocks, and they should all Glocks should be Glock 19s.
Yep.
This is sort of the same thing.
It's
all rifles should be ARs, and all ARs should be Mark 18s.
That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah.
Sort of. Well, no. I mean, the Mark 18 has its place. I wouldn't want to try and, shoot for any kind of accuracy at 300 or 400 with a Mark 18, but I zeroed it with a scope last year on my other one at 100, and I got a very acceptable AR accuracy at 100 with a scope on it. I love the size of the Mark 18 package. It's so wieldy and it's so lightweight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to run the Daniel Defense course with my NEA 39, but I don't know, man.
The just, Daniel Defense course?
Did I say that?
You did.
Oh, the Carbine Vitals, too.
I like. I mean, it could be called the Daniel. It's Daniel's defense course.
That's right. Yeah. So, anyway, glad to get it back. All I've got on it right now is nothing.
It's nothing.
It's got a set of backup Magpul backup irons. I had one from a set from I don't know when, and then I gave the rear to Jazz. I think when he was here, and I gave it away to somebody last time we were all together. So I bought one off a guy on CGN, and that's it. It's got nothing. And I know now my priority for AR accessories, pick up the gun. The first thing that I miss the most is a bad lever. I miss a bad lever the most, followed by a BCM extended charging handle, followed by a single point sling mount. Right. That's going to be the hierarchy that I'll be putting those things on this gun. Hmm. It's just so ridiculous not having a bad lever on there. And they all have one, except for this one. So
I don't have one.
I can't work without it. It's so practical for locking it open and unlocking
it. Is. I'm thinking about getting one for mine.
You'll never go back.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And then we had a gun club meeting on Wednesday where we get a couple of things done and stuff and things. So.
Good.
Yeah. Stuff why don't things. We jump into upcoming events and tell us what's coming up.
Well, the 5th annual charity shoot's coming up June 27th, so that's going to be awesome. We have Chris Kingston on later to talk a bit more about that, so I'm going to leave this here as it is, and we'll talk more about that when Chris comes on. The para course with Tommy Nelson of the Gun Dudes, July 3rd. We have a spot left there, so if you want that, call up Tommy. Just go to para-training.com and you can sign up there. And the next day, if you do miss that spot, you still want to come out and shoot some IDPA, the next day, July 4th, come on out. There's a mini match. Come on out and shoot IDPA with us. It's going to be a lot of fun. Carbine Vitals 2 Clinic, September 4th and 5th. This is where you're going to learn how to run your carbine if you're American, and carbine if you're Canadian. there are still spaces available, so to sign up, just send us an email at slamfireradio@gmail.com, and we'll tell you how to get signed up for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. You should really get involved with this. It's going to teach you a lot of really cool skills. SummerSlam, August 8th and 9th. Registration's open. So if you want to shoot SummerSlam, it's going to be awesome. So you might want to give
five guns on the prize table.
Oh, 5 guns in the prize table. So yeah. That's
and
awesome.
5 free memberships for SummerSlam 10 and 3 free club memberships.
Awesome. Very nice. So last thing, t-shirt orders. T-shirt orders is now done. I should be picking those up this week. Please send your money if you haven't. It's $25. That includes your shipping if it's being shipped. Those who are attending the charity shoot, just have your money at the charity shoot and I will just hand you your t-shirt there. Americans, if you need to send money, I believe a Canadian money order, you can get that at your bank. Just mail that to me if there's no other way to get that to me. We'll sort something out. But
sorry, Matthew, another charity shoot update. Sean Bevins has started a firearms company and starts with an S. Do you know the name of it?
Nope.
Can't believe it's escaping me right now.
I've heard of it, but same as you, I just can't think of it.
It's almost like Spartan. Something like
that. It's something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he called me last night and wants to send us something to put on the prize table. And he may actually be able to attend. He's going to check and see what's...
Well, that'll be cool.
Yeah, so he may be in attendance at our charity shoot.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And Tracy Wilson is also coming down from Quebec.
Very nice. Yeah, this is going to be one of our best charity shoots ever.
Spatha, S-P-A-T-H-A.
Spatha, yeah, I would
Tactical
say Spatha.
Tactical Equipment.
Cool.
That's Sean's new company. So they want to sponsor the charity event.
Very good. Mm-hmm. All right, well, why don't we move on to the news? And this news comes to us from our friendly senator, Celine. You do the rest.
No, it doesn't matter. We don't need to get her name right. Celine...
Hervault-Payette. Is that right?
Hervault-Payette. Hervault-Payette,
sure.
Hell vieux.
Okay, we're done with that.
Yeah.
she put out a little she's submitting a bill titled Strengthening Canadians' Security and Promoting Hunting and Recreational Shooting Act.
You're promoting hate.
Fortunately, she misspelled strengthening. So
wonderful.
I just wanted to point that out because that's the sort of thing I point out. And this is why I point that out, especially with this, because she starts this off with, "I oppose the conservative philosophy and the gun lobby's belief that better access to firearms ensures better security." I'd like to just stop right there is what I'd like to do. Completely refute that. However, she continues, "It's just the opposite. However, I respect the hunters and sport shooters." Clearly she doesn't. "This bill promotes the activities of hunting and sport shooting while strengthening the security of Canadians. Through my bill, titled, and misspelled, Strengthening Canadian Security and Promoting Hunting and Recreational Shooting Act, I intend to accomplish the following. Overhaul the current firearms program by prohibiting all firearms in Canada except hunting firearms. Redefining the three classes of firearms by making all firearms illegal, except hunting firearms, and by localizing the prohibition of restricted firearms."
What does that even mean? What's a hunting firearm?
I don't know.
And localizing the prohibition of restricted firearms?
Here's the thing. Right now, all firearms are already illegal in Canada.
Firearms ownership, yeah.
All firearms, yeah. It is illegal to be in possession of a firearm in Canada, period. The only way we get around that is they give us a license exempting us from that law. So it's already illegal, Senator Sillin. You don't need to do that part. It's already been done. She continues on, "Limit the definition of hunting firearms to the arms that are really used for the purposes of hunting." Well, that's fantastic because I know somebody who used a Robson Arms XCS to shoot a bear.
XCR, yeah.
Or XCR to shoot a bear.
Yeah.
I know somebody who used a Mini 14. I know somebody who'd use an M14. I know someone who'd use, you know, AR-180s.
M305.
M305, CZ858s, VZ58s. I mean, all of these guns, I am going to... Oh, I can't. There's nothing in season. I was going to say, I'm going to take this BRS-99 out hunting. If I could, I would. Great. If what they're really used, then, you know, we got that one in the bag. Unfortunately, she won't see it that way. And then she has a whole bunch of more of things that she wants to do, and I'm not going to read them because they just make me angry. So here's the last one here. I'll read. "Undo the provisions of Bill C-42. So look, this senator, this is a senator that recently said that she was scared of the MP5s that the RCMP were carrying outside of Parliament Hill. So here's the thing: a couple of months ago, we had a shooter enter Parliament. He killed a police officer, or a soldier, I'm sorry, he killed a soldier. They were attacked, and the RCMP, you know, and the security guards, and actually it was the sergeant at arms that actually,
Kevin Vickers lit him up.
Yeah, Kevin Vickers. Yeah,
shot him up 19 and, times or something, it said?
Yeah, it was fantastic. A bit of heroism is what that was. So she was protected by somebody with a gun. And now those same people, just because their guns are now a little bit bigger and obviously a lot better suited for the task at hand, she's scared because it's a scary looking gun. I don't even know where to begin with that. The people who are there to protect you have guns and now you're scared of them. How insane in your brain do you have to be to not put the fact that good guys with guns equals good. It's bad guys with guns that equals bad. I don't care how you can give an RCMP officer a howitzer for all I care. I'm still not going to be scared of them because the RCMP is there to protect me. Mm. They're the good guys. This lady needs to be corrected and
educated. Yeah,
educated, and it needs to be done politely. It needs to be done with tact, and you need to go. I mean, we've posted it on the Slamfire Facebook page, and I'm sure it's all over Facebook. I'm sure you can find this. You need to find her email address. You need to find her physical address, not hers, her for Parliament, the Senate, and you can write to her free of charge. You don't even need to put a stamp on it. You need to write to her and tell her that you need to educate her, and you need to do it, like I said, politely, but use the talking points that we have here. I mean, guns are not bad, and all the guns in Canada that we have are not causing any sort of detrimental effect on society. None at all. In fact, all of the legally owned guns in Canada have many, many, many times saved people's lives. guns are not the problem here. She needs to learn this. She needs to know this. And you listeners need to tell her. I'll be telling her, but we all need to tell her. This is unacceptable.
Concur, man.
Cool. All right. Well, we're going to move on.
Yeah. Horse beaten.
So joining us now, we have Chris Kingston. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Not bad. You've been on the show with Trevor and I before, but I think that was back in CRR days, not in Slamfire days.
You got it.
Yeah. So why don't you, I mean, we've got a whole whack of different and new listeners.
Six.
So six extra.
We got six new ones now, Chris.
Six.
Six. Oh, yeah.
Oh, the show's doing really good, man.
Cool.
So why don't you reintroduce yourself to our new six listeners? And kind of give us a little bit of background on yourself, who you are, where you came from, how you met John Moses Browning, whatnot.
Okay. I am the immediate past president of the Restigouche Gun Club after about probably two decades of being the president. So, me and John Moses kind of started the gun club. It's been a real adventure. I watched the proceedings last night from the back row of the guys that were gathered there, and watched the executive work and try to get their feet underneath them. It's a new group of guys, all young guys, which is great. I heard them read out the financial report. I mean, we have more money than we've ever had in those accounts. The club is doing awesome, fantastic. We're going through... we're finishing the 500 meter range. We're going to be hydro seeding the berms, all those things that money allows you to do. So it's been fantastic.
That's awesome. It's nice to hear of a gun club doing well financially that way so that you can continue to grow. And every time I go to the Restigouche Gun Club, I see something new. You guys are always building something. You're cleaning rocks up. You're building new berms. You're putting in buses and tanks and houses and just crazy things. And it's amazing. That's a really, really awesome range.
Yeah. And the only sad point of the last month or so was, not the last month, but this year was the loss of Serge. Of course, Serge Noel has been a sort of the spark plug and the driving force, for the Restigouche Gun Club, for as many years as I've known him. And then, we lost, Ronnie DeGroote and his wife the other day in a really tragic motorcycle accident. And Ronnie was just another one of those guys, had all the equipment, the tractors, and the time, and just beginning to enjoy being back there with us guys and shooting and building and all the rest of it. So we have a transition to go through. A loss of important people such as that cause huge gaps in our abilities. So, but I'm confident with our group that we'll prevail.
I think someone will step up and take over. I think, most times whenever there's a vacuum, it does get filled.
Yeah, Mother Nature doesn't like a vacuum, that's
nope.
for sure.
Nope. You're right.
So, tonight we're here to talk about the charity shoot and my involvement with the Restigouche Senior Citizens Home. And, of course, with Trevor's invitation to... host the three gun shoot and the benefit going to the foundation. My involvement in the foundation started actually as a director of the housing nursing home. So I'm the vice president of the board of directors. And it was a subject that the board had talked about for more than 10 years. And it just didn't go anywhere. Finally, I'd asked the president to give me the file, if there was in fact one, and to see what I could do with it. We took about 2 years of paperwork to get the charitable number. It's a federally registered charity with a tax number, so we can issue tax receipts. So the first donor was the lawyer that looked after the filing of the papers and all the paperwork. So that contribution was around $9,000.
Oh wow!
So he was the first contributor. Subsequent to that, we hired a strategic planner. It was a corporation called BNP Strategies, and that's all they do is charitable strategies for large campaigns. So early on in the campaign, we had decided this is not going to be about chicken bouillon suppers and spaghetti suppers. You're not going to raise the kind of money that we wanted to raise. We had set a goal of $1.1 million, and we were going to do it in 12 months. Matter of fact, we did. The first donation I got was $250,000.
Wow. That's an ambitious goal, and it's and you said you've already achieved that?
We surpassed the $1.1 million to we are now a little over $1.3 million.
Wow. That's amazing.
And the campaign still... I still have donors or potential donors out there that we haven't even approached at this point. So the campaign, although has come to a stop, and in that 12-month period, we did raise the one point. It actually turned out to be 1.177 in change that we raised. Now, it was a daunting figure when I first started. It gives you those kind of anxiety and sweats and sleepless nights. You say to yourself, never going to be able to do it in a town, and a community and a county that's been so hard hit economically. Loss of, you know, major industries, loss of population, you know, just the whole atmosphere in this area has been certainly one of change, and if I could say so, you know, sort of going through our own mini depression up here of economic depression.
There's nothing mini about it. This is not the town I grew up in.
No, it isn't, and myself either. And I've been, you know, a resident, as Trevor has, all our lives. So to set a goal of 1.1 million in the middle of what, you know, was perceived as an economic downturn or an economic disaster in this
collapse,
area, basically collapse, is, as I said, gave me some moments where I didn't sleep at night. But it is surprising the generosity of the people. And the strategic planner did say to me, you'll be surprised at who has the money and doesn't show it. And I said, fine, no problem. So anyway, after the first donation, I went in to the we had a campaign committee. And one of the smartest things that we did is we recruited recently retired a civil service worker who headed up social development in Restigouche County, a fellow by the name of Charles Spinor, who is the mayor of Balmoral, by the way. Very, very well connected. Bilingual, very articulate, knows people and knows people, opens doors that I could never help open those doors. I'm kind of the grassroots guy. He walked in circles I could never walk in. And every time we sent this guy out, he came back with money. So recruitment became a huge asset to us. We took our time. We recruited well. And I think we were 9 people that raised that money. I learned, you know, many things about that plan. The plan to be able to have an interview with somebody and already have a set figure that you're going to ask for. Don't go there with no figure in mind. So when that, you know, inevitably after the preamble, they're going to say, well, what are you looking for? And I learned to say figures like 50,000, 100,000 without blinking an eye.
You got to practice that a few times in front of the mirror, don't you?
You do. You do. And I've watched them, you know, I've watched the Adam's apple go up and down, right?
Yep.
Now, this was a 5-year donation program for all the donors. So, say for instance, the first donation I got of $250,000, I didn't arrive with $250,000 check. What I did arrive was the first year of a 5-year program. So I arrived with $50,000, which would be renewable every year to a total amount of $250,000. So to say that I already have $1.3 million in the bank would be a fallacy, because in fact, we don't have that amount. Will arrive in the 60 months from the inception date of the campaign. So I also learned one other valuable lesson, which is persistence. I learned that it's, you know, not to take no for an answer, to make sure that I left whoever I was interviewing with an appointment to come back, and made sure I made those phone calls, made sure I met everybody individually and personally. And you know, it worked out. It kind of flat spotted around June and July of last year. We didn't raise a cent in 2 months, and I figured that's it. We're not going to get there. And August, September, September is when we closed it. In that period of time, we raised almost $500,000 in that two-month period.
That's cool.
That is, it was probably for me, next to the Canada Games in 2003, probably the most important campaign I've been involved in. The people, the numbers, you know, the success, just a phenomenal experience. And at this point in my life, probably the last real major fundraising campaign I'll be involved in.
Yeah, that's what you said about the Nationals.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
For you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I looked around last night at the gun club meeting and the success that we did have at the Canadian Nationals and how wonderful that experience was as well, and to be involved with people that are no longer with us, including Ronnie and Eddie Poirier and, you know, our range rats and those kinds of people. All of those experiences, you know, have added value to my life. So, yeah, you're right. Probably, Trevor, there'll be something other that will come up. But so in the interim, the foundation went from a campaign committee to a real board of directors. So we're in that process now. We enacted a constitution, a set of bylaws. We've appointed directors to the board. I believe we have 9 out of, and we need 10. So, we have our first annual general meeting, which is pretty historic for us, coming up, this month, probably the 21st or 22nd of June. And, this board of directors will, continue to be the driving force for the foundation. I am the president of the foundation, so I wanted to enact policies and procedures looking forward in the big picture for the next 5 or 10 years, in which the board of directors has a system put together so that people that weren't involved in the campaign don't spend all the money. So we want an endowment feature of the campaign. So probably about $500,000 of it will be endowed and invested and make money going forward. So we also have an investment policy that we're looking at, and we're going to get proposals from investors. So it's a kind of a good problem, the administration of the foundation, but it's working well and on to the future. We have a new nursing home that's being built. The philosophy of the foundation is to support that nursing home, not in building the nursing home, but improving the lives of the seniors that reside in the nursing home. So programs such as a new seniors handicap van, so seniors can get out more. We're also looking at equipping seniors with iPods, and having students interview the seniors to find out what music they would like and download it in the iPod, especially for residents with advanced dementia or Alzheimer's. Music calms the soul of the savage beast. We've seen that. So if we could find, you know, a method to get music into their ears, it will calm their anxieties and frustrations. So those kinds of programs, you know, every dollar we promised, every dollar that we made will go back to the residents, which is a real important mission and vision for the foundation. So there you have it in a nutshell, really. I don't know what else I can say about it that, you know, is not kind of thumping my own drum, but, you know, the 9 people that were involved in the campaign, the 9 people that are now directors are a formidable group of people.
Yeah, well, it's nice to hear that everything worked out as well as it has, and we're absolutely thrilled to be able to help contribute to that with our charity shoot. But you're involved with something else here in the province that we're interested in too, and that is the Firearms Committee. What's the official name of that?
Provincial Firearms Advisory Committee.
There it is. Yeah.
Yes, we're an advisory board to the Minister of Public Safety.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, that's something that we've always been interested in. I think you have told us about it before in the past, but why don't you tell us a little bit about what's been going on with that recently, and then maybe we could touch on the new CFO and maybe get a little bit more insight as to who he is.
Well, that climate certainly has changed from the former CFO, and that, for me, became a really serious personality conflict, which impacted the club, which actually impacted Restigouche Gun Club. So we're really pleased to have a local boy. Actually, he's from Dalhousie. I know his parents, Derek Erdley. He's a career civil servant, comes from public safety. So he was on, he was, I believe, in the parole.
Probation branch, yeah.
Yes, right, and enforcement. He's a real regulation guy, and he admits that right up front. Not a big shooter, hunter kind of thing, but very, very personable. Most recently, their whole group of inspectors, himself, their office staff, were up to do the range recertification at Restigouche Gun Club.
Yes, I heard that was coming along. How did that go?
Well, we haven't had a report back. I think they were a little bit ambitious about sending the paperwork back to us. They said, well, we'll do the inspection Thursday and we'll have all the paperwork with you Friday. And I looked at them and said,
No, you won't. No, I
didn't say it out loud, but yeah. I thought that was a pretty ambitious statement, given the complicated, this would be, Restigouche would be the most complicated range, I believe.
Oh, without a doubt.
In New Brunswick.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And they did find some, faults in the range, and you know that goes without saying. This was right after the snow melt, so we had rock issue and berms issues and those kinds of things. But they can be resolved, and they will be back to certify the 500 meter range once it's completed this month. So we met them on the range. Two of us followed them around, answered their questions. They had already been on YouTube.
YouTube. Yeah, that's never ended badly for the range, has it?
No, it hasn't. But they were very, very upfront with it and know what we've been doing. I had an opportunity to speak.
It wasn't
with
us, Chris.
Not this time.
It wasn't us this time.
It wasn't you guys. But I did have an opportunity to explain to them, examples such as the Canadian Nationals, where we put probably a minimum of 160,000 range or 120,000, I guess, rounds down range in that 4-day period, if not more, probably a third of that was on steel.
Mm-hmm.
Had an opportunity to talk to them about IPSC, about, the premise that all targets had to be within a meter and 90 degrees of the berms. I said, they're not going to work. That's not how this works. And, of course, they were standing over the holes in the range floor, the impact areas where we've been shooting targets at close range into the floor. And, it's no use denying what we're doing. They already know. They've watched it on YouTube.
Yep.
And our experience on our range is probably a million rounds downrange in the 9 or 8 Summer Slams and 2 Provincials and Nationals. Zero accidents and the ability to explain to them the one-on-one process of shooter, range officer, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So I thought we had a great opportunity there to school them in what they were doing. Now, Tracy Cormier, who is in the CFO's office, is the wife of an IPSC shooter.
Oh, well, that's handy.
Yes, so she knows very well. Now, her husband hasn't shot in some time, but I don't know if any of your viewers out there or listeners out there would remember Leo Cormier, but that would be her father-in-law. He was a gunsmith and did, and probably still does, gun repair. And
yeah, I've been into his home, Chris, and I've seen the work that he does. Matthew, that 308 or that M305 you saw that was rebarreled in 22-250, that's Leo's work.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
he does. He takes M305s and rebarrels them in 243, 22, 250. He makes a Norc look better than a Springfield. His gun room, Chris, is like my wet dream. It's amazing.
Yeah. He's done some work for me as well. Of course, you know, when you got John Moses Browning's 1911, you need
it's going to have
work.
Malfunctions. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so I thought the whole thing went well. Now we don't have the paperwork back. Derek was very upfront with me. He said, you know, if you have a berm that's sagged and doesn't meet the angle, doesn't mean your range is going to be shut down. It'll be that cell until you improve it or, you know, whatever. He said minor repairs that don't require a visit can be done by a pitcher, and you can be emailed to me the remedial work. So that's, you know, that whole aura of cooperation has come back with the CFO's office. He understands the importance of ranges. He understands, you know, the safety factor, the education process, all of that. So it was really good.
That's phenomenal.
So the PFAC committee, of which now I am the president or the chairman or the chairperson, I guess now is the good political speak, has been in existence since Bill C-68. It's a committee that evolved from a very – I remember there was a movie out about 12 jurors, and they were called 12 Angry Men. Well, in that room at the start of this was 12 or probably 100 angry men. Out of that came the advisory committee, and it started under Bernard Lord's government, and it was initiated by a fellow by the name we call Forbesy. He's a lawyer from Fredericton who was elected and became an MLA and spearheaded getting this committee together. It is the only one in Canada, actually. The only one that's close to us is the federal advisory committee, which advises the federal minister of public safety. So now we see Bill C-42 going through, you know, the logical sense, I guess the good sense gun bill.
Yep.
And so on... That's their effort. Having an advisory committee to the minister in this province has reaped some benefits. I mean, we've had the migration of, for instance, the migration of shrouding creeping towards us from Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
The committee was instrumental in rebuffing those recommendations. So there is no shrouding in New Brunswick, and we have the proof that shrouding is not essential. It, you know, if steel targets are used wisely and safely, we're living proof. I mean, we have...
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, like you just said a couple minutes ago, over 1 million rounds downrange and no accidents. We shoot a lot of steel at the Rusty Goose Gun Club. I've been there. I've done it. And, yeah, no accidents. Shooting steel is not as dangerous as people say it is. You just have to understand the physics behind it.
Yeah. The other thing that you're always combating is the kind of the what if... You know, this is what a civil servant will say to us. Well, what if you strike the side of the popper and it hits a rock and it comes back and like the mystery bullet that killed Kennedy, right?
Right, yeah.
No. You can't live your life that way. I mean,
no.
What if I went out on the road, got run over by a semi-truck?
That's right. I'm still going to go out on the road. I'm sorry.
You're not going to live in a bubble, right?
No.
So, he's, like I said, he's a kind of a regulation type guy. The only thing is that he can't enact a regulation or a range rule without the approval of the Minister of Public Safety. He can't do it arbitrarily.
Right. Well, that's
so
good.
So he has a New Brunswick range standard that he goes by.
Mm-hmm.
This was a range standard that was developed by the committee and enacted by the legislature. So he can't make up those rules. So the committee would never recommend shrouding of steel. Matter of fact, our recommendation is to follow the rules and regulations enacted by the different disciplines. So Cowboy Action has its own set of regulations for steel. IPSC has its own regulations for steel, et cetera, et cetera. So, and so does Long Distance Silhouette Rifle, right?
Yep.
So why not use what's tried and true?
Exactly. Makes sense to me.
So, that, in a kind of a nutshell, around that board, are, of course, range operators, gun retailers, collectors, like the Odell collectors, black powder guys, long distance, of course, rifle guys. So there's a, you know, an eclectic group of people with years and years and years of experience around that table. And I think this CFO actually respects that experience.
Good. Well, it's nice to see. I mean, the reason why you would have an advisory committee is so that you would have some experts, you know, at the table whenever you're coming up with new laws and new regulations and new policies. It doesn't make sense for somebody who has no idea how guns work and how shooting works and how the shooting sports works to come up with rules whenever they don't have any experience with it. So it's nice that New Brunswick has this. My question is, why don't all the provinces have this?
Well, I think, Chris, when you guys started, you were the only firearms advisory committee, but there may be one other now in one of the provinces out west. If I'm not mistaken, Matthew, this came up before when we were bragging about ours, and I believe Jarlath may have corrected us on that. I can't remember which province it is, but I have a reason why I think they're not in every province, but what do you think, Chris?
I think most jurisdictions are controlled by the RCMP, other provinces, in fact. So the concept... The concept is lost on them.
Right. The CFO, him or herself, is actually a member of the RCMP.
You got it.
Right. Where in Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, they're an appointed
Ontario person. Ontario as well is an appointed person. Yep.
Yeah, but Ontario still appointed a cop.
Oh, they did. Well, yeah. There you go.
That person's set to Chris Wyatt. And he's supposed to retire, though, or has retired, has he not, Matthew?
I don't know. All I know is I can't wait for him to not be that person anymore.
Yeah.
Well, C-42, if I could interject. C-42 yes. Was supposed to seriously limit the CFO's powers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be really nice.
And the RCMP's powers, right? Yeah, about when we get into the Swiss Green rifle.
Uh-huh.
And how they arbitrarily went from non-restricted to...
Prohibitive.
To ban it, right?
Yeah.
Turn it in for destruction.
Yeah.
That didn't please the minister. The minister got blindsided by that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it'll be nice to see all of the provinces having to enforce the Firearms Act as a federal act, as opposed to, you know, come up with their own policies. This isn't a job for them to come up with their own policies and to make things more difficult. We've already got the law. The federal law is all we need. We don't need anything else.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, I don't think the minister knew that gun owners really could get that pissed off in that short period of time until he started to get it on his desk, right? Then he found out, right?
Yep.
That you just can't. But, you know, that's kind of the RCMP philosophy, right? Is if they could have absolute control, absolute police state.
That's what they want.
It's exactly what they want. Mm-hmm. And key to that would be disarmament.
Yeah,
I don't think we're all asleep about that. That, you know, that we'd have to be increasingly vigilant. Just because it's now the federal police body that's doing it all, doesn't mean that you know, everything is just peachy keen.
Yeah, who polices the police? I mean, High River showed us that they have no problem breaking their own rules, and that there are two sets of rules, a double standard. Here in Canada. And it was, when my comment, who polices the police, there have been access to information requests surrounding the High River inquiry that have just been flat out denied.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. You know, it's for sure that they used the gun registry
data
to do it. I mean, they didn't check every house, they only checked the houses that they knew had firearms. Yeah. Skipped one, took another, right?
Yeah.
So don't tell me, right?
Yeah. So, well, Chris, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the charity event itself and in particular the barbecue. We've reached out to you and your family in an effort to start another fundraiser at the actual event, and that is to raise money for your son-in-law. So why don't you... talk to us a little bit about what's happening there.
Oh, well, you know, this was kind of a double prize when it came to the charity, and I was able to convince my son-in-law and my daughter to provide the food and, you know, be the cooks at the barbecue. Claude, who is a former Bathurst City police officer, ended up with lung cancer and is now in his third chemo session, doing pretty well, but I think, you know, we still have some surgery to go through, more chemo and probably more radiation. Claude is 46 years old, and although he's handling pretty well, the family pretty devastated by the diagnosis, and it is asbestosis or mesothelioma, and how he acquired that, we have no idea, but it's a pretty critical, I guess, or bad diagnosis. When you Google it, one of the things I've learned is not to Google stuff.
Yeah.
It can be pretty devastating. Anyway, so they've had several fundraisers. Matter of fact, they have one this weekend for him. I think the Beresford or Petty Rush Roadrunners Association are doing a mini marathon, and they've got bracelets and shirts, and I think the bracelets say is that you'll never walk alone or never run alone. Now, Claude is in really good shape. He's run all his life and to the gym and all of that kind of stuff, so his physical shape will certainly benefit him through this ordeal. Claude, as a police officer, was the second responder to the Boys in Red in Bathurst. This devastated him. He was a probationary police officer at the time. He only lasted about another 2 years. After that, he ended up with severe PTSD and still battling that. If you can imagine at night in the flashing lights of your cruiser, you're pulling children out of snowbanks and body parts. It killed him. He's just not that type of person. I don't think any of us are to be able to walk away from that and not have it affect us. So, he may have had this in his body for some time. I think the stress and anxiety of that situation probably brought it forward and probably exacerbated it. And here we are today. So, you know, much thanks to Trevor for the offer, and you know, we'll make a little bit of money for his fund for his travel, because most of his surgery and will be in Quebec. So, real positive experience for everybody here.
Well, you know, we're hoping for a huge turnout. We want it to be the biggest one ever. It's a local charity, plus now with the family connection to you and your son-in-law. I hope that people, you know, come with a generous appetite and a generous need to give.
Yeah.
So they're welcome to put a donation can out for tips, you know, tips or donations, along with the barbecue as well, so we can have that going alongside as well.
Yeah, if there's one thing I've learned about gun owners is they're a generous group and they love to help each other out. I've seen that time and time again on different gun forums. I've been party to it myself, both giving and receiving. And, you know, it's one thing I'm proud of when people ask, are you a gun owner? I can say with pride, yes, I am. And it's not just because, you know, I'm fighting for our rights as Canadians to own and bear firearms, but it's because I know the type of people that we get to interact with. And firearms owners are just good people.
Well, you know, Keith, to that, when we had the memorial, and Trevor can attest to that, we had the memorial for Ronnie DeGroote on his property. Family put out two donation jugs, one for the Restigouche Gun Club and one for the Restigouche Timber Trails Snowmobile Club. And correct me if I'm wrong, Trevor, almost $500 that day came to the gun club. So not only from probably gun owners, but from the public, they knew Ronnie was acutely involved in the success of the gun club and had it at heart, and showed their love and their commitment to what his ideals were.
Yeah. Boy, did they ever! And looking at the guest book, I estimated there was approximately 350 to 400 people in attendance for Ronnie and Carol's memorial. And that just blows my mind. I mean, their roots into the community ran deep, and, big family, farmers, just involved in any way they could. They didn't understand the word no. They really didn't. Everything that he did for the gun club, he did just as much or more for the snowmobile club. So.
Yeah, and that community that came together, Trevor, helps family heal, helps everybody heal, because we're all, grieving in our own way when you lose vibrant people such as that so suddenly, so tragically. You really, I think for the first few days, I didn't sleep. I, just so angry. I could have chewed rocks, but, we'll all heal eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
So.
Very good. Well, Chris, I want to thank you for coming on and joining us and talking about these issues with us. It was really informative, and we really enjoyed hearing from you.
Listen, it was a pleasure. This is the second time I've been on your program. I really enjoy it's a passion. Both the foundation and the gun club have been a passion with me. Of course, the gun club for more than 30 years, and this foundation now just in its infancy. So, I'm just so happy to be able to, thump my own drum here and tell people that gun owners are good people. We're not what the public likes to portray. We're good people.
You're right. Excellent. All right. Well, thanks again, Chris. And we'll have to have you on again probably around the time of the charity shoot and, talk to you more a little bit then and see how everything's going.
Got it. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Listener feedback.
Yeah.
That's where we're at now.
All right. The first one comes to us from Joe at LostTarget.com, and he says, maybe of interest, today, June 4th, 2015, I crossed into Quebec via New York, and was informed by the person working the border that long gun registration were still required to enter Quebec.
Huh. I don't think that's correct, is it?
Mm. And
he's just saying where he was.
Coordinates there. Yeah, he was on Route 221. This has been an ongoing issue, and I had thought it was, and I had thought it resolved, but obviously not. The person I talked to said they recently received a letter from Ottawa telling them to keep asking for the registrations. Find that hard to believe that Ottawa would send them that letter when Ottawa wants, was the one being sued over the data.
Yeah.
As an American with a Canadian firearms registrations, I still have my old registrations, but I know a number of Canadian long gun owners who destroyed their registrations after the court verdict. And who knows how many firearms have been bought and sold from the time of the verdict. I asked if a Canadian without a registration could bring guns into Quebec via the border, and he said the firearms would not be allowed. A number of Canadian hunters and target shooters may be in for a surprise if they attempt to re-enter Canada via Quebec crossing and ask to produce a long gun registration. Joe from LostTarget.com. I think Joe ran into somebody who is either hasn't got the memo yet or is deliberately being misinformed.
Something's going on there because they were told that their long gun registry, they cannot have it. They cannot have that information. I mean, they can make their own provincial registry if they want, but they can't have access to the federal one, which makes all the federal registration certificates null and void.
Yeah. So they're just exercising their own prerogative to try and enforce illegal gun control.
Yep.
And that's telling what it is. You that you're required to have something that you're actually not required, but their stance is, hey, this is our province. We're not going to let you in unless you produce it. Yep. That's just a way to keep a gun out.
Exactly. Well, and Joe's an American. Otherwise I'd be asking him to write his MP and telling
him. He should write the MPs anyway. He's an American with registered guns in Canada.
That's true.
I was on the Armed Squirrels Project Sunday, and I was telling Sticks, Americans can get Canadian firearms licenses so that they can actually purchase firearms in Canada.
Yep.
So he's part of our system and he's being affected by it. He should still write and our Quebec listeners should look into this as well.
Definitely.
No point telling anybody in Quebec. Somebody from Ottawa will have to tell them to knock it off.
Yeah. Very good. Well, thanks, Joe, for letting us know about that. This next one comes to us from George at New Shooter Canada. This is the same George that owes me $20. This the one and the same.
Just so we're clear.
Just so we're clear, George, you owe me $20.
Oh, the sale is over, by the way.
Yeah, it is over now, but he still owes me $20.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to give some love out to the SKS.
Why?
As you mentioned in your last episode, the SKS is a good bang for your buck, even if you ranked it as your third choice. As any listener that listens to my show knows, shameless plug, New Shooter Canada, you can find us on Facebook and iTunes.
Shameless plug, yes, we get it.
My father owns an SKS, and we often plink away with it. The surplus ammo is cheaper than dirt, and as I sometimes have to remind my dad, who keeps wanting to put a darn scope on the thing, it's a World War II era battle rifle. As long as you keep your expectations in line, also known as low, with what the rifle was made for, then it's a great rifle. It would be at the top of my best bang for your buck list. That and the Mosin Nagant. That's true. I mean, if it's, you keep your expectations low, they won't be surpassed.
That was one, and the M305 and the M4, the Norinco M305, the Norinco M4, and the SKS, I definitely agree with you guys. If you want to get into semi-automatic centerfire rifles on the cheap, these are actually not just cheap like the Tokarev, but they're reliable as well. So they do, for me, fit that best bang for the buck kind of situation where you're getting a centerfire semi-automatic rifle. They all work. They all go bang. And
they're all fairly accurate. The SKS is more accurate than people are led to believe. It is an accurate enough gun for what you use it for.
Like you said,
the M305 and the Norinco M4, those are fantastically accurate rifles for the price.
They exceed expectation for what you're paying for.
Absolutely. Yeah. So George continues on. So the SKS is a mass-produced, cheap post-World War II battle rifle. It's designed for a soldier straight out of Russian boot camp to shoot a man-sized target at under 200 yards. This is not a special forces rifle. It's an infantry rifle. And I might be so bold as to say it's a rifle to be used by cannon fodder. So I love my dad's SKS, which someday will be my SKS. Don't forget to subscribe, download New Shooter Canada. Cheers, George of New Shooter Canada. So many shameless plugs there, George. You owe me $20.
There you go. Awesome.
So yeah, no, George, you're right. The SKS is a great little rifle for its price. I don't know. I mean, Trevor said the other two exceed our expectations. I would say this one just meets it. But
no, and I mean, for me, it doesn't.
Well, for Trevor, it doesn't at all. But
No, I'm still an SKS hater. Because it is what it is. And what it is not good enough for me. I'm a professed
gun snob.
So, you know.
As long as you understand that you are.
I am a gun
snob. That we all hate you for it.
And I do deserve a little bit of hate because I don't hide the fact that I'm a gun snob.
Right.
And I do judge you by what you take to the range.
So I'm coming to the charity shoot with a Tokarev and an SKS in a Tapco stock. With what kind of shotgun could I get?
So, you and I probably won't speak that day. HP9 was the clone that you.
That's what it was. Yes, thank you. The HP9-1 was that 870 clone that I had. That was actually really, really good.
Yeah.
But it was the same price as an 870. So, what was the sense?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, bring us this next one here.
Well, it's from Ian to you. He says, "Hi, Matthew.
Hi."
Hi. Heard you talking about the linear muzzle brake you got for your FVSR and was wondering where you found it.
It was in the mail. I found it in the mail. Philip Hoffman actually made that for me. Fantastic guy. He custom made it for me. I sent him the measurements. I told him how long I wanted it, how big I wanted the holes, how big the diameter of my rifle barrel was, and he made it to match, and it was awesome. So
and
I'm sorry I don't know where you can find one.
God love Philip. He was going to modify an A2 style birdcage flash hider to go on the front of my VZ58, and I just never followed through with sending the two parts to him. Or
right,
I gave up on the idea. I think I'll just actually get the CSA comp that they make for it.
Gotcha.
Anyway, on another note, not sure if you have access to Seller and Bellett Standard 22 out on the East Coast. It's a little more than bulk pack of Blazer, but I find it very consistent in my FVSR. Interesting. Thanks for all you gents do.
I actually have 200 rounds of that, I think. Maybe 300 really? Rounds of that in the closet.
I've never seen it.
I did take it out and shoot it with the FVSR, and the Blazer works better still out of my rifle. So, but thank you for that. I mean, I was also told the same thing by the clerk in Canadian Tire where I bought it in Fredericton. He said, this is good stuff. And I imagine it probably is good stuff in a lot of rifles, just not in my rifle.
That reminds me, there's still two 50-round boxes of the Blazer here with your name on them that I forgot to give you last time you were here.
Very nice. Thank you.
And then from Sean, it's your turn.
It is my turn, yes. From Sean from the Regina Association of Practical Shooting. He says, hey, guys. Raps. Just wanted to let you know what's going on in and around Regina in the next couple of weeks. IDPA on the 13th of June, that's this Saturday, which is probably too late for some people, but, you know, some people might hear it in time. They have a monthly level one match at the Raps range located at the Regina Wildlife Federation grounds. Round count is just shy of 100, and they have 6 stages planned, so that sounds like fun. And also on the 20th, we have our monthly level 2 provincial match of IPSC. The round count is 120 with 6 to 8 stages planned. So that would be cool for you IPSC shooters out in Regina if you wanted to go out and get another match in. He continues on, we also have our monthly meeting June 25th at 7 at the Creekside Pub in East Regina. And then he gets the interesting stuff, the really interesting stuff. He also picked up some new guns that he loves. First up is a Norinco 1911 that I got a smoking deal on. Not going to tell you the price, but let's just say it was well under $500, and it came with 5 Wilson Combat mags, which are $45 each, and 2 8-round Kimber mags. I feel like I committed a crime in this deal, as the gun is in near mint condition with just a few tool marks on the inside of the slide.
Yeah, they were already there, don't worry.
Yeah, and it came with a set of Hogue rubber grips. That is a really good deal.
Yeah, especially
with
if
all
you
those mags.
Yeah, if those are 47Ds, those are the sought-after 1911 mag. They're the one that actually makes the gun run.
Beauty. He continues on. Next, the next one I've wanted for a long time, a Smith & Wesson M&P 9 Pro. Everything was as I expected on this gun. Better sights, longer sight picture, smoother and lighter trigger pull. I hope to run this in SSP. Stock service pistol, I think, in IDPA match this Saturday. Maybe I can give the perennial winner, Wes S., a run for his money. I picked it up for around $700, which is $55 to $75 cheaper than what I would have gotten it brand new. So that's good. Good deal there. And now, here is one that is my new baby. A CZ-75B 9mm in stainless. This gun is so pretty, I may not even want to shoot it. I picked it up to be my production gun for IPSC in a trade for a Gen 3 Glock 19. I got rid of the Glock because my hand kept getting bit from the slide due to my high grip on the frame and my fat hands. CZ then came with 4 mags in mint condition for a trade. I came out ahead. And then he included pictures, which we looked at, and they were very cool. So CZ for 19,
But it's stainless, and it is. I saw the pictures. It did come with 4 mags. It is in pristine condition.
Well, especially the fact that the CZ's not going to bite your hand the way the 19 did. You definitely. I mean, that's.
Yeah, if you had a gun that you weren't comfortable shooting, then monetary value aside. But I think he did do, as far as monetary value is concerned. There's a lot of Glock 19s out there right now, and they're on CGN every day. I've not seen a CZ-75 in stainless. So, you know, there's that.
There is that. Definitely there's that. So, excellent. Well, congrats on the new guns there, Sean. And I hope you get some listeners out to your matches in the coming weeks. So, if you do end up at one of Sean's matches, make sure you hunt him down and let him know that you heard about the match from us here in Slamfire. That'd just be really cool. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send it to slamfireradio@gmail.com. We love hearing from you guys, so please send us an email or send us an iTunes review. We love iTunes reviews, too. We don't have any new ones this week, but we do enjoy them. We're currently sitting at exactly 100 five-star reviews on iTunes, so I'm very thrilled about that. So 80 on the Canadian and 20 on the American. So awesome.
Excellent.
Let's roll this into shout-outs.
I've got two this week. One to RJ for the great deal on an awesome Mark 18. I think this was a safe queen. There's not a mark on the gun anywhere. It's in pristine condition. It came with a aftermarket upgraded stock, which I was able to repurpose to another gun. The handguard's flat dark earth. I didn't realize that, or I was probably told and I forgot. So now it's given me the excuse to go out and buy the Daniel Defense flat dark earth furniture that they make. The Daniel Defense furniture is really cool. It's two-tone. It's either in OD green, black, or flat dark earth with rubber overlays on it to make it nice and grippy. Looks really cool. Muffin put it all on his Mark 18 that he got from me. And it's not really flat dark earth like tan. It's more like a bronzy type color. It's kind of neat.
So, interesting.
Yeah, normally I like my ARs all in black. But as Bolivar said, I don't care. It's not going to affect your group size. I'd rather cut my eyes out than listen to you talk about the color of an AR. So, yeah. And then to Luke Giroux for delivering my M1 Grand to me at the Miramichi at the Black Badge 2 weekends ago. So that enabled me to get it without having to travel, and I was able to shoot it on Saturday after the qualifiers over on the Miramichi Gun Club rifle range.
Nice. So, yeah, Luke's a good guy.
He also brought raspberry cordial over from Prince Edward Island for my wife.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I've got a shout out to Ryan. Ryan's someone who had been listening to the show, and I think he may listen to this week because I ran into him in town. I was in at the ATV dealer getting some brakes for my four-wheeler so I can finally stop for a change. And Ryan was there. I didn't recognize him at first, but he's like, "Hey, Matt." And I'm like, "Hi." It took me a minute, but I finally clued in. He was one of the first guys that I met when I moved to Edmonton out at the range. And we went to the range several times together in shotguns and had a great time. So it was nice to run into him again. And we're going to get back out to the range hopefully soon. I'm going to give him a call. I got his number from him again. So we're going to head back out and do some more shooting with Ryan. So that's going to be awesome. So hey, Ryan, he's a train conductor for CN Rail. So
no way.
Yeah, there's a train. I mentioned that because there's a train going by right now, and it's probably him.
Ryan, so tell them to stop calling my house. our telephone number must sound like there's a CN station here in town, and it must be very similar to the CN station's fax number.
Yeah.
Because, like,
they keep
once
calling
a day,
you and leaving faxes?
Yeah.
Oh, terrible. Man. That's basically Ryan's fault, I believe.
Yep. So, Ryan, now that I've got a connection to CN, I want him to take care of this. Make this problem go away, please.
There you go.
Thanks, buddy.
Problem solved. All right. Well, thanks for listening. That does end it for this week. Please do go check out the other podcasts at the Crusader Podcast Network, which is located at crusaderpodcast.com. There's lots of really cool shows over there. Please join any or all of our National Firearms Associations. It's really important to support them because they help support us. So be involved. Also, please write your MPs about the current issues that have been going on. Let them know that you as a Canadian firearms owner, a legal Canadian firearms owner, is not happy with the direction that some of these latest issues have been going in. Just let them know that we're still here, we're still vigilant, and we still want a fair shake at what goes on here in Canada. Please check us out on the forums, especially Gun Owners of Canada. We've got our own little section there, and it's particularly active recently, so it's nice to see that. There was a lot of good reviews on there, or comments about last week's show regarding best bang for your buck guns. So go over there, check that out, and see what other people are saying, and get in on the conversation. It's really neat to hear and to see you guys interact that way.
Yeah, I can't argue with Chris Anderson by myself.
No, we need more people there to help keep Chris down, basically. Chris is awesome. We love Chris.
Yes, we do, actually.
Yes. Like us on Facebook, please. We're at 1,219. Is that how you say that? Or is it 12 to 19? Teen.
Killing me.
I'm kidding.
1,219. No decimal required.
That's a comma.
And no comma required.
Yes, there is. You always put a comma.
French use commas and English don't. Three digits space. That's how.
Oh, that's the new math, is it?
That's the new math. Three digits.
All right, I wasn't aware of that. All right. Anyway.
0.80, it's 8/10 of whatever unit.
Yeah,
you're
8/10 of being hung up on here real soon. you're
not
right
Bolivar,
there,
man. Best show ending ever. just leave it go like that, man.
Say goodnight, Trevor.
Good night, Trevor.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Yeah, we should probably get him to reintroduce himself because we've got a lot of new listeners since last time he was on.
Yeah.
So basically who you are, how you met John Moses Browning.
Spreading. I love it.
My first Velociraptor kill, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
How you killed your first dinosaur.
Yeah.
These sorts of things, the interesting stories and whatnot.
Okay.